Tony from Australia, can you hear us?
Hey, how you doing? Sorry, I was on mute. How are you?
Okay, pretty good. We can't see you. I think you have to not only unmute, but oh, there you are. Perfect. So how
Hello,
are things
everybody.
In Australia? We for quite a while we thought, oh my God, they can't really get their act together. But things are changing there too, right?
Indeed they are. We're starting to see a little bit of a transition over here, Rainer, and thanks to the great work, you know, coming across from you guys over there in Germany and abroad. And I've been on television these conferences with the Balkans and the USA and it's New Zealand. As you know, Rainer, I've been in discussions with you for some time and thank you for having me on. It's wonderful to be here.
Great. So what's the story in Australia? I've seen lots of video clips that show people who are actually demonstrating, gathering for huge rallies. Very interesting development. But there's also court cases that are making headlines right now.
Yes, there are. And firstly, if we go to the it's a battle of narratives, isn't it, in the media? So the media will call them the anti-lockdown. However, it appears as though there is a growing consensus that they're called freedom celebrations. I guess that's a battle of semantics, isn't it? There were quite a few people. The media actually put it down as 3,500 attended the Sydney rally. Well, I put it conservatively, and it's not that I counted everyone, but it would have been around about 35,000 to 45,000. Mm-hmm. Now that is a significant increase. Now we had it in Brisbane, Victoria, Melbourne. In Victoria had great numbers. I think the issue here is the people are really starting to wake up and question. Which is what they are entitled to do. They are questioning the efficacy and the safety of the vaccines. They are questioning the research around the COVID. And more importantly, I think what they're standing for really is human rights and informed consent, right? That's what this is about. It's about locking people down for something. I think within the last, say, I would say, Rainer, within the last, say, 24 hours, I'll give you some statistics. Latest COVID data in the last 24 hours is total cases for 2021, approximately 5,261, total deaths, 15. And a survivability rate of about 99.72%. That's assuming that the actual virus has been isolated, right?
Yeah.
We've got that. Plus, you know, the PCR testing issues that are going on, where they're at extremely high thresholds, cycle thresholds, extremely high. They're running in between, over 40. So, yeah. The documents coming through, and they vary between state to state, okay? Mm-hmm. So you can get them between 35 to 45. Some are running about 45. We've got that. And, I guess our Therapeutic Goods Administration, they're releasing data on a weekly basis. So I think this week the total was 399 suspectedly deaths, but only 6 causality links. But I always say, gee, there's a lot of suspected deaths within a short time after someone receiving a vaccine, right? There are a lot of coincidences. I'm not saying anything with respect to that other than what their language tends to suggest. But I will say one thing is that people are waking up, okay? Now, I don't know if you read my letter of the 7th of July.
Yeah.
2021. And I've received a lot of responses from, I haven't received any responses from the two major parties, the Liberal and Labor Party, but a lot of the independents have come through and they've indicated some support. I'm getting a lot of support from, I'll tell you right now, we have almost every industry in Australia. So lawyers, doctors, specialists, professors. We have almost every trade. We have pilots, we have police, we have paramedics. Anyway, you name it, they're all very supportive. We have counsellors. And just yesterday, a mother's group was formed, and that's the one I fear the most, is when the mothers get involved. That's where I say, oh, look out, here it comes. And so an alarming issue here is, in order for students, they're wanting to vaccinate students mandatorily now. So I don't know what there's a lot of mandatory language going out. But what's very interesting is how the media spins it. And I'm sorry, I don't speak fluent German or anything, but I could hear there was a lot of media talk.
Yes, yes.
And I remember writing a thesis some years ago about media manipulation and political manipulation. We're seeing, we tend to see what the remnants of that, or, you know, the residual effects of that occurring, insofar as saying that, for instance, numbers at rallies or freedom celebrations are grossly underestimated when, in fact, there's a lot more. We're seeing our Prime Minister, when he fronts the media, he'll actually say, oh, no, it's your choice whether you want to take the vaccine. It's your choice. It's all about informed choice, right? But then documents will come out and they say, well, we want mandatory the next day.
Yeah.
Or before that, we want mandatory vaccines for aged care workers and hospitals and students. And so what we're seeing is this slow decline towards mandatory vaccines, whereas I think if you read my letter, it was all about informed choice, right? It's all about you having the ability to make a choice. That is a human right. Yeah, so that's really where we're sitting here. And I will say one thing, Reiner, it's fabulous because we are starting to question, which is what we're allowed to do. And I actually urge everyone, question. You're allowed to ask questions. There's nothing wrong with asking a question. The data that's coming out, I think if you've seen in my letter, I actually spoke well before a lot of what's being said now in the Australian media. I actually represented the issues with respect to the vaccine shedding, okay? And what is the alarming thing with that? Well, if you mandatorily impose a vaccine upon people and then say, I want them for the aged care and I want them for the vulnerable, which is in the hospitals, right? And we can safely assume that shedding is occurring, then, and we also understand what the pharmaceutical companies are saying, that it doesn't actually stop you contracting whatever it is, then we're actually, aren't we introducing it into the vulnerable sectors? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? We're actually we are actually implementing a policy of introducing it into the very sectors.
Yeah.
And that is what concerns me. And I wrote about that before a lot of people, and that has been concerning me. And I really, we're seeing death rates go up and, you know, vulnerable people dying. We're seeing a lot of vulnerable people getting sick. Is it because of the shedding? And there seems to be a correlation, Reiner. I'm sorry, but I'm seeing with the rollout, and it's a proportional, it appears to be as the rollout goes up, more people are going into hospital, okay, or more people are dying. Now, look, I'm asking questions. I'm not saying what the cause is, but we really need to ask questions.
Did I hear you correctly when you said you get the numbers, the data on a weekly basis, and there last week, there are 399 suspected deadly consequences as adverse reactions, but only 6 causality links. Was that the number for the whole of Australia?
Yeah, yes, but bear in mind, as I said in my letter, I think it's absolutely, it's grossly underestimated is what we're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, they estimate around about, we can only estimate what we don't know. We can't tell you what is unknown. Mm-hmm. But these are reported, okay? Mm-hmm. So if someone doesn't report it, we won't know. And if someone, let's assume that, for instance, there are categories of reporting. and those categories of reporting for health practitioners does not categorise someone as having a side effect. For instance, if you look at a lot of the product information from Pfizer and, you know, the FDA, and there we have it, in the Australian product information, there's not a lot of side effects that are known. But if we look at the FDA, maybe you can see or maybe you can't see that, but the FDA actually has some very serious ones, 22 serious conditions. None of the media or doctors or government or employers have given that to the people, right? So how do we have informed consent? How can you give someone informed consent if you don't know what the risks are?
That's the point.
Okay. Yeah. So that's the sort of stuff. So just to go back to your question, I'll read out the actual sentence straight off the TGA website, which is: the TGA has received and reviewed 399 reports of deaths in people who have recently been vaccinated and found six that were linked to immunisation. Now, that's directly right now. I've just read it to you live. Mm-hmm. Now, bearing in mind that the reporting rate per 1,000 doses is 4.1. So really the reporting rate is very low, isn't it?
Okay, let me translate. So, let me quickly translate, Tony, so that our German-speaking viewers know what's going on there. Also, Tony Nikolic ist einer aus der großen, großen Gruppe. Zahlenmäßig ist das immer noch so um die 100, aber dennoch eine große Gruppe von international vernetzten Anwälten, die unter anderem auch und insbesondere durch Vermittlung des Ausschusses überhaupt erst vernetzt wurden, die unsere Arbeitsergebnisse, zum Beispiel die Expert Opinions, die wir haben, auch jetzt benutzen. Tony Nikolic ist eigentlich ein Menschenrechtsanwalt, ist inzwischen ein bisschen spezialisiert aufgrund der Corona-Geschichte auf die aufgeklärte Einwilligung oder Einwilligung nach Aufklärung, Informed Consent, und beschäftigt sich notgedrungen auch mit den PCR-Tests als Grundlage für alles. Er sagt, es war ganz wichtig, international mit den Kollegen zusammenzukommen und sich da sowohl was die Tatsachen angeht als auch was die Rechtslage angeht auszutauschen, denn die Rechtslage folgt ja immer den Tatsachen, und da die Tatsachen überall gleich sind, ist sogar die Rechtslage weitgehend zumindest vergleichbar. Es gibt hier eine Schlacht der Narrative, genauso wie bei uns. Aber es zum Beispiel spiegelt sich das wieder in der Darstellung der Proteste. Die Mainstream-Medien, über die wir ja gerade ausführlich gesprochen haben, berichtet exakt so wie bei uns über 3.500 Menschen, die zu einer Demonstration in Sydney zusammenkommen. Und er sagt, wenn ich es ganz niedrig aufhänge, waren es mindestens 35.000 bis 45.000. In Brisbane und Victoria gab es weitere massive Demonstrationen, die von den Mainstream-Medien, also wir müssen ja inzwischen sagen, nach allem, was wir wissen, von den gelenkten Medien, und zwar nicht von den öffentlich gelenkten, sondern von den privaten, die öffentlichen gekapert haben, gelenkten Medien, verschwiegen werden. Aber die Menschen wachen auf und beginnen, Fragen zu stellen. Insbesondere, was die Wirksamkeit und die Sicherheit der sogenannten Impfungen angeht. Da geht es dann vor allem um Menschenrechte, weil ein grundlegendes Menschenrecht, übrigens auch in Australien, das ist, die körperliche Unversehrtheit darf nicht angetastet werden. Es gibt hier auch in Australien eine, selbst wenn man die offiziellen Zahlen nimmt, eine Überlebensrate betreffend Covid, falls es Covid überhaupt gibt, sagt er, falls das überhaupt jemals isoliert wurde. Wir gucken uns das, die Entscheidung aus Alberta, nochmal genauer an und werden das auch besprechen. Aber da gibt es eine Überlebensrate von 99,72%. Und das ist so gewaltig, dass man sich in der Tat, sagt er, fragen muss, warum muss man irgendjemanden dieser, wie wir inzwischen wissen, hochgefährlichen und wie wir inzwischen außerdem wissen, völlig wirkungslosen sogenannten Impfkampagne aussetzen. Die PCR-Tests, die allem zugrunde liegen, sind in ganz Australien immer noch viel zu hoch, mal abgesehen davon, dass sie, das werden wir dann mit dem nächsten, in der nächsten Sitzung oder ich glaube in einem Ad-Hoc-Interview nochmal genauer feststellen von Mike Adams, mal abgesehen davon, dass sie eben sowieso keine Infektionen feststellen können, aber alles ab 35, hat uns Dr. Mike Yeen gesagt, 97% False Positives. Hier geht es immer noch um 35 bis 45 Cycles of Amplification in Australien. Die wöchentlichen Veröffentlichungen der Zahlen sprechen, hat er gerade noch mal ausdrücklich vorgelesen, nachdem ich nachgefragt habe, für die letzte Woche von 399, das ist offiziell für eine Woche, von 399 vermuteten Todesfällen nach Impfung. 399 vermutete Todesfälle nach Impfung. Nochmal zurück zu der Covid-Survival-Rate, auch in Australien, 99,72%. Aber nach Impfung offiziell 399 vermutete Todesfälle, wobei bei 6 sogar die Kausalität festgestellt wurde. Und auch hier, Tony Nikolic weist darauf hin, das ist grossly underestimated, das ist wahnsinnig untertrieben. Wir wissen das von den Zahlen aus den USA, wo der Kollege Tom Renz über einen Whistleblower festgestellt hat, dass wahrscheinlich eher um die 500.000 Tote nach Impfungen inzwischen festzustellen sind in den ersten 180 Tagen. Er bekommt unfassbar viel Unterstützung, sagt er, aus der gesamten Industrie, aus der gesamten arbeitenden Bevölkerung, von allen Institutionen, die es da gibt, für die Anwälte, für die Ärzte, für die Piloten, für die Paramedics, das sind speziell ausgebildete Medizinassistenten, kann man sagen, gibt es bei uns so nicht. Inzwischen hat sich gestern, sagt er, eine Gruppe von Müttern gebildet, die ihre Kinder schützen wollen. Und er sagt, wenn das erstmal passiert, dann haben wir es hier sozusagen mit Löwinnen zu tun. Es wird immer wieder dieses Impfen und das Testen als mandatory versucht hinzubekommen, wobei die gleiche Nummer abgeht wie überall. Die offiziellen Regierungsvertreter, wir wissen ja, wessen Vertreter sie in Wahrheit wohl sind. Die offiziellen Regierungsvertreter sagen, nein, ihr könnt informed consent, ihr müsst nicht. Ihr könnt das entscheiden, wie ihr wollt. Die Drecksarbeit wird dann denjenigen überlassen, die als Puppets unterwegs laufen lassen, zum Beispiel den Universitäten oder anderen Institutionen, die dann sagen, bei uns kommt ihr nur noch rein, wenn ihr getestet oder geimpft seid. Aber offiziell heißt es eben, es ist alles freiwillig. Aber, hat er eben nochmal betont, immer mehr Menschen wachen auf, immer mehr Menschen stellen Fragen. Jetzt hat er auch das Thema Shedding angesprochen. Auch das, er sagt, ich will mich da nicht festlegen, ich stelle hier nur Fragen. Kann das tatsächlich so sein, dass hier auch Menschen, die nicht geimpft sind, betroffen sind? Ja, I was going to suggest, and I'm gonna email you a letter that was that is going to circulate very soon, pretty much all over the world, by Doctors for COVID Ethics. And on 4 pages, I think I can make that a little shorter, on 4 pages they explicitly spell out, and this is all going to be referenced, so you have all the footnotes, etc. They explicitly spell out how these so-called vaccinations, for one, are not vaccinations at all, how they're not necessary because there is no pandemic, and if there were, then there would be alternative ways of treatment that are really effective and not dangerous, and most importantly, how these so-called vaccinations are not effective at all. They provide no immunity whatsoever, but they're extremely dangerous, as you just spelled out. Okay, go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, so I know a lot of doctors down here too, and they're working very tirelessly. So we have the COVID Medical Network or the Australian Medical Network down here. They work tirelessly, Rainer. They are a group of doctors, so from anaesthetists to general practitioners, cardiologists, you name it. We have scientists, immunologists. Yeah. We have a range of people within the medical sphere who have been expressing their concerns, also towards the preventative type of medications and prophylactics that are available. Now, I think it was March 2020, Rainer, the Governor General of Australia declared a potential pandemic pursuant to what we call the Biosecurity Act of 2015, so section 475, I believe it's subsection 6C. Okay, that basically states, Rainer, that there can't be any vaccines or other medications on the market, okay, for a biohazard or biosecurity hazard to be declared. What's interesting is I have been seeing, and I guess it's a matter of verification. I don't know if we can get our hands on some of the contracts out there between pharmaceutical companies and respective governments. But it may be, as we know in contract law, there's usually a lot of condition precedents in there, right? Conditions as to sale, purchase and procurement as to whether the contract actually specifies that there should be certain conditions within that marketplace preventing a medication from going to the market. And we know in Queensland that hydroxychloroquine, for instance, was actually made illegal. Okay?
Yeah, you could not get it. We've heard the same story from India, and that's particularly stupid because in India, hydroxychloroquine has been around for decades and has the population, apart from the fact that they have their own natural medication, of course, it has been accepted by the population as safe and effective. And so that kind of backfired, at least in India. Even at their Supreme Court, it backfired.
Yeah, and you got that other one that appears to be coming, which is, now I'm not a doctor, so I can't give medical advice, and I'm certainly not giving medical advice, but you also have the issues of ivermectin, right?
Yeah.
Now, ivermectin actually won a Nobel Peace Prize for its properties, and it was deemed safe. I believe it was Merck Sharp Dohme had the patent for 25-odd years, right? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, COVID comes and, well, you know, questions as to its safety and efficacy arise. Okay.
We do, by the way, Tony, we do have contracts. We do have sales contracts between several countries, sovereign countries, and BioNTech, Pfizer. So if you want one of those, I think they're pretty much all the same. I'm going to forward them to you.
Please do. I think in my letter, I think it's the last paragraph, I said we should get access to some of those. So I think, not only the Australian people, but the global community could shed some light onto that.
Let me ask one question. You said in March 2020, who did what according to the Biosecurity Act? Because I didn't
The Governor General. Yeah. The Australian Governor General. Yeah, the Governor-General of the Commonwealth. So, because the Biosecurity Act is a Commonwealth legislation. Mm-hmm. Now, we're only asking questions here, right? Mm-hmm. We ask questions, and that's what we're doing. We're asking questions, and we don't seem to be getting any answers. I sent my letter. My letter was really questioning the legitimacy of Australia's approach, right, to coerced mass vaccinations, lockdowns, PCR testing, official mortality data, censorship. So through the media, we have a lot of censorship.
Yeah.
And it's really sad. It's really sad to see in a liberal democracy that's going on. I've actually represented doctors and defended doctors who were being gagged by regulators, okay? They were being told you can't talk about any alternatives or If you're going to talk to your patient, then you need to tell that patient really all about the benefits and very little about the risks, okay? And then for some reason, then they say, we want it to be accurate, okay? And my representations were essentially around the side, well, how can you be accurate if I can't tell you what the risks are, okay? And then you want to try and deregister doctors, and we've got doctors being threatened with deregistration almost on a daily basis.
Yeah, this is, once again, this is a lockstep approach. We're seeing this all over the world. We're hearing these same stories from everyone all over the world, which really spells out in capital letters that this is a planned agenda, because it doesn't happen by coincidence. Tony, let me quickly switch over to Professors Rocco Loiacono and Gigi Foster, if you don't mind.
They're great. Okay. They're fantastic, both of them.
Okay.
Hey, Reiner, just one quick one, if I could. I just want to say one thing. I've got a client that I'm presently representing who was at the freedom celebrations, and he was alleged to have punched a horse.
Yeah,
that's the allegation.
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you what's happened. He's refusing to take the PCR test, okay? They sent him to jail. He's refusing. He's never been to jail in his life. They've put him in jail now. He has been in, and I think this is a very big concern, because We're talking about COVID. He's been in jail now, and he's not even allowed access to his lawyer, okay? He's not allowed access. He's been in jail close to...
And he did not punch the horse. I saw that. If you see the whole clip, you can see that he's trying to protect himself, but he didn't punch the horse.
Well, indeed. And now I've been to two bail hearings, and they still won't bring him before a court. What we have here is a sense of incommunicado. I filed an issue with respect to the standard minimum rules for people in for prisoners in custody, or we would know them, United Nations standard minimum rules, as Mandela rules, right? Mm-hmm. So rule one is access to a lawyer, and rule two is access to the outside world, such as his mother. His mother's worried sick. His mother's worried sick. So here we have what I'm trying to say is whatever happened at the rally, that can be what that's for a court to decide. But he should never, ever be denied access to a lawyer. He should never, ever be denied access to the outside world, especially his mother, who has a heart condition, is worried about her son. And the other thing is this, if you're not taking a PCR test because you're not providing informed consent, I think you would agree, and as I would, it's like having a forced confession in a police statement, isn't it?
Yeah, this is like torture. It's torture.
Exactly right.
It's totally illegal.
He's in solitary. Yeah. He's in solitary. God. No one can talk to this guy.
Holy smokes.
This is Australia 2021, okay?
I just want
to let that out.
Yeah, that's important. Thank you, Tony. This is really important. The whole world needs to hear this and see this. Okay, Tony.
Yes.
I don't want to be rude, but I'm really grateful for all three of you that we're finally getting to see the light at the end of the tunnel, hopefully, even in Australia. We're going to do the best we can to give you a positive example to follow from some parts of the world that nobody has on their radar, India, for example. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, all your colleagues. Sorry, Renata. Thank you, everybody. Take care.
Thanks so much.
Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Rhino. Talk soon.